that currency is not just speculate on whether it's going to go up or down. It's whether there's going to be a lot of these different transactions that occur on the network that require people to pay some sort of fee to validate that transaction, which gives real value and utility to these cryptocurrencies.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll. Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. I'm your host, Tate Duryea. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Gibson. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk about crypto. You know why? Because I know nothing about it. I know nothing about blockchain, and I'm highly skeptical. So I'm going to play the skeptic on the call in this show. So for those pilots who are like, man, I want nothing to do with that unregulated, decentralized thing, this episode is for you because you need to learn about this stuff because it's coming, whether you like it or not. So really excited, Tate. What else did we talk about today?
We talked about blockchain, the difference between blockchain and cryptocurrency, the FTX collapse. We talked about the SEC and their involvement. We talked about Web3 and what the heck that is. I think it's a fascinating space. I know a little bit about it, and I've always wanted to have a conversation with Ben Jorgensen about this. So I'm really excited to get into the show.
I mean, this guy is so experienced. I mean, he literally is a token issuer. So if you want to talk to the source of information, this guy has been living and breathing this stuff. And so he's able to actually talk about what's transacting, what's happening, all the little nuances and details. And I think what you'll take away from the show is you'll have a better understanding of the technical terms that are inside of crypto and blockchain technology so that you can at least have a basic understanding of what you're getting into when you're getting into it. So
definitely. And he's not just a crypto guy. The man has been building blockchain technologies for the Air Force for as long as I've known him, which has been close to a decade.
Yeah, and if the Department of Defense and the Air Force is actually looking at using this technology, it's probably something you might want to start paying attention to and getting yourself educated on, even if you're not going to invest in it, even if you are skeptical of it like I am. you know, warm up to the idea, start getting educated on the space. And we really thought this episode would be impactful to the aviation community that is our listeners.
Well, we hope you enjoy it. Let's get into the show. Ben Jorgensen is an American entrepreneur and investor that focuses on emerging technologies in Web3 and has been featured on NASDAQ, Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, Hacker Noon, Cointelegraph, and ABC. For the last 5 years, Jorgensen has served as founder and CEO of Constellation Network. Constellation is a Web3 company with cryptocurrencies DAG and LTX. It is building an ecosystem for developers to build Web3 applications that integrate with the existing Web2 digital infrastructure and a more scalable Ethereum. Notably, Constellation is one of two companies contracted with the U.S. Department of Defense, including the U.S. Air Force and Civil Reserve Air Fleet. Constellation's work with the DoD, called Iron Spider, leverages their digital infrastructure to cryptographically secure mission data using smart contracts and Constellation's decentralized network, the Hypergraph. So with an academic background in anthropology, economics, and political science, Ben weaves a humanistic cultural perspective with economic viability through his visions and leadership style. And to avoid being a complete slouch, he's also the co-owner of two restaurants in San Francisco, Gozu and Yokai. Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tate. Sounds like I wrote that, you know? Thanks for having me on, man. This is I'm looking forward to this.
There'll be a quiz at the end and all what all those acronyms mean. And so
we're gonna get to that. Yeah. 100%. Well, there's a few of them in there, but we love acronyms as pilots. Ben, you're one of the smartest guys that I know, yet no one knows what exactly you do. So we're gonna try and figure that out today.
I love that. That's so funny. Well, maybe you're probably
we're all aviators here. We fly airplanes, but you're probably the closest thing to a spaceman in terms of your understanding of technological developments and cutting edge tech that is going to transform the way we work, the way we live, the way we interact over the next, you know, multiple decades. So I'm excited to get into all that, but could you first maybe back us up to your background, how you got into this high-tech world in the beginning, maybe what college looked like, and then how everything sort of unfolded.
God, it's like the book David Copperfield, you know. I always say that. It's like the longest book ever about where did I come from? Where was I born? What color hair do I have? I think maybe it's like I guess I could frame in college. Like, where do you want me to begin in college? I don't know. Like, that means
wherever it makes sense.
I've always had this like crazy drive to do cool things. You know, I grew up in Indiana, so you're kind of limited as to like the magnitude of the world. But yet it was always part of me to like get out and do something new. I didn't apply for any like Indiana University schools. I didn't want to stay in state. But I graduated high school a year early. And so I went into like community college and Indiana University Extension. And I met this, I took this class on anthropology, which you don't even know what that is when you're in high school, right?
Right.
And it like completely transformed my whole mind. I read this book called Ishmael and by Daniel Quinn, and it like completely revolutionized how I look at the world and how I look at our narratives as a species and a culture. And I said to the professor, I was like, hey, there's no way I'm going to school at Indiana University. I mean, good school, but I was like, I have to get out of here. Where would I go if I wanted to pursue anthropology? And so I went, he said, go to University of Arizona. They've got the best and most progressive anthropology school out there. And I really took a liking to anthropology because it studied cultures, right? Like, what are our belief systems? How does that tie into economics? How does that create self-regulation and governance of an individual? Like, it really kind of puts so many, it's multidisciplinary in many ways. It was really fascinating. I think it's like the Obama administration was the first person to bring a chief of anthropology or have like an anthropologist on the chief of staff, which like I always thought that was like a crazy vision, a good crazy vision, that they were actually starting to like, how do we study our own culture and understand that, right? And so I got into college. I come from like a lineage of entrepreneurs, and my dad was like, my dad and grandfather were like, how are you going to make money in anthropology? And I said, well, I'm going to go study cultures in like random in the Amazon. They're like, okay. And I said, that's not a good answer. They're like, well, you're going to need to get a job in college then. And I was like, oh shit, I got to get a job in college. So I went, and I think that sounds a little privileged, but I was like, okay, I'm going to prove myself academically, because I was always very academically inclined. You know, I was like the president of Amnesty International and student government. You know, I did like everything, and I got to college. So I did 3 majors, 6 honors thesis in 4 years. And I did this like, I did like 6 honors thesis that like merged all these concepts around like, you know, privatized corporate military operations into economics and anthropological outlooks. I then created my own magazine at college while doing all that. That was around, it was called American Political Rationality, which was a convergence of professors and students to really like share their mind without having to worry about advertisement. And I was like, oh yeah, it's going to be super successful. Somebody's going to buy me out. Well, that actually failed on the first issue, because I didn't have any advertisers and nobody was willing to buy it. So
that's fair.
It was a good learning experience. I know, right? But it really got me in this like path of thinking. I think anthropology really sets you up to think differently and be open to new mindsets, new perspectives. And so I think that really kind of plays into how I kind of am as a leader in many ways. So that's kind of like the founding story. I can then like expedite and be like, I did multiple startups before I actually got to this one.
Yeah, I kind of want to tease out, like, how did you land on blockchain technology? How did you come to understand that? Because I think that's something that most of us still don't have our heads really wrapped around, even if we have a basic concept of it.
Yeah, and I'll go through a basic concept with you guys, which I of what blockchain is. But right before I got into Constellation, which is the company that I'm CEO of now, I was actually the chief revenue officer for this New York Times bestselling author named Salim. I'm blanking on his name.
We'll link to
and
it
he wrote
show.
A book called he wrote a book called Exponential Organizations. And Salim gave this really amazing talk, and he was part of this group from kind of these think tanks that that taught corporate leaders about disruptive technologies. And so we would go in, he would give this like really profound talk about disruptive technologies, where's the future's heading. We would talk about blockchain and crypto, and we'd educate all these corporate leaders on how to use like disruptive models in their company. And then we would put together a consulting package for them. And what I quickly learned, and I was living in San Francisco at the time, which is the city of builders, right? I always saw San Francisco as like the city that builds the future. And so when I was kind of in this role and we were backed by Accenture, I wasn't really a fit for consulting. I don't have a background in consulting. I have a background in building, right? I'd already done a couple of startups on my own. And so I met a few individuals that said, hey, we have an idea around something that evolves and is more scalable than the Ethereum network, or the second most popular cryptocurrency out there. And they had a vision, an initial vision that was very data science jargon heavy, which I'll avoid going through that today. Well, it'll probably come out because I feel like I've earned that kind of computer science degree voluntarily through this, but. When I heard this kind of vision around using decentralized infrastructure tools in any code base and how that's not applicable with Ethereum, I was like, oh, wow, that's a pretty fantastic, amazing vision. Essentially, it was reconstructing the internet, which is kind of one of those things where you kind of laugh and you're like, oh, okay. And in fact, one of my co-founders, when I poached him, was like, he was at Oracle and I was interviewing to go work with him at Oracle. And when we started getting funding, I was like, hey, Benjamin, time to come on board. And he's like, you do realize that you're basically proposing building a new internet. And which it sounds kind of crazy, but if I were to break it down to you, it's actually not as crazy. But so that allure got me into, so I had a little bit of blockchain knowledge, but the allure of the potential of the technology is what drew me in. I don't have the story that I owned Bitcoin back in 2011. I don't claim that I did. I actually got into the technology before I got into the speculation aspect of the currency. And so that was really kind of the fascinating part for me. And when I met these other individuals, I basically looked at him and said, you need somebody that can actually like ground and frame your narrative so that people could really understand it. And so that's kind of how I got into it today. I think that the first thing when everybody hears like decentralized networks and crypto, they always think of scams. But there's a lot of fascinating technology that's really being built. And I think the best way to like get everybody on the same page is, what is a decentralized network? How does Bitcoin operate? And I asked this by this investor once, and I was like, how do you sell blockchain technology to people that don't understand it? And he's like, oh, it's super simple. And he's like this very like regal English fellow. And he's like, well, it's like you're at a bar, right? And you're at a bar and there's all these people in the bar. And I look at Tate and I look at Ryan and I go, hey, I'll sell you my beer for $5. And you go, okay, I get the $5, you get the beer. And then I say, hey, wait a second, I didn't give you my beer. And you go, yeah, you did. I gave you $5. You said that. And so the difference of a decentralized network is that we can draw on the entire bar to validate that transaction took place. And so you're not just reliant on my word or Tate's word or Ryan's word. You're actually reliant on an entire community of what we call nodes that orchestrate these networks to validate that transaction exists. And that's blockchain at its core.
That's so interesting. So I've never heard it explained so simply, and that actually makes a lot of sense. What are some of the benefits? Like, why should we care?
Well, that's a good point. Well, I think it's created, I mean, look what we're going through with the whole banking, the banking industry right now, right? Like, we're having, you know, the central government come in and save banks, and were banks accountable for that money? Were they diversified enough? Like, all these questions are really coming up that you don't, that the average person really doesn't have any transparency on their hard-earned money that they put into a bank. So a lot of this start came from like a distrust in centralized systems that orchestrate our daily lives. And we're actually seeing bits of it crumble, where people don't really have a lot of trust in how banks diversify what they're doing with money. You know, Bitcoin came out of the 2008 crash, right? Came out like shortly after. So the benefits are that it's not, you can't only look at the technical benefits of blockchain. You also have to look at kind of the anthropological lens, is like the socioeconomic movement that's occurring too, and the amount of transparency and accountability that the average consumer is now putting on central organizations. And so what the value is really about removing that need for trust, or that's why they call blockchain a trustless ecosystem, because everything, every transaction is on an immutable ledger that everybody can access and monitor and really hold everybody accountable, right? And I think that's one of the main values that you're seeing right now, is that you can't dispute a certain transaction or what's being done, and that people can monitor and hold other entities accountable. And you don't have to have, and then now there's like programmatic elements that are coming into play with like smart contracts. So Ethereum introduced applications that you could say, hey, you don't need to have these like, you know, legalese contracts out there. You can just have this programmatic interface that executes when both parties meet their terms. And it's all programmatically done. And there's very little need for actual like legalese around that. So I think those are some of the core values that are out there.
So you said that this exposure, this transparency that blockchain would provide would prevent, so you'd give more clarity, or maybe a strong statement would be, would prevent like the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank. Can you make that more relatable to what happened, and maybe, you know, from what we know today about SVB collapsing, which was, you know, they were heavy on bonds. There was a run on the bank. The bonds are devalued. They weren't marked to market, and they basically didn't have the liquidity to pay the depositors. What would a blockchain done? Because the banks have disclosures, and those disclosures are made widely available to those that invest. But it seems like, and I'm making an assumption, that the failure was because the bank was heavy in bonds, which is a very safe thing, and the call on the deposits is really what caused it, and the spike in interest rates devalued the bonds and all that. What would a blockchain done in that scenario that would have prevented or provided more transparency to people?
Yeah, well, one, I don't think, you know, the average retailer retail person that uses a bank really understands that not all their money's in the bank when they deposit it, right? I think, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. that's, I think there's a lot of people that understand that, but maybe not everybody. And so in blockchain, let's take Constellation, for example. You've got a community of people that govern our public wallets. So our public wallets that we hold, our treasury and funds that we fund operations with. So they can monitor, set alerts that say, hey, they moved, you know, $100,000 or $1 million. Well, the community can start to actually self-organize to be like, well, what are those use of funds going towards? Oh, are they really selling off? Are they selling a bunch of crypto? Are we going to get hurt if I'm a holder of that crypto? So there's a different level of like reporting and analytics almost that come with blockchain. So as a company, you can, while we're not on NASDAQ, and in many ways we're a public facing company, like every transaction that any of us do that's on the ledger or moving funds is recorded and has some sort of audit trail behind it. So what does that mean? It also has, you know, with crypto companies, you become like you become like econometrics, like proficient in it. Well, maybe not proficient, but you have a certain level of being some sort of like economic monetary policy at the company, right? Is there inflation occurring? Do you use inflation to attract people that want to buy your token? All these kind of different levers that force a company to really think through a lot more elements than just like, hey, we're going to get deposits and then we're going to lend it out, right? Like there's more accountability. There's more people watching what you do. And I think that's what we're seeing with the banks is there are people going, hey, we think that you're over-indexed in the startup business. You've underwritten too many startups. You're backing venture capitalists, like things that other banks can't really get behind because they don't know that business, right? And so I think that was one of the things with SVB is you just were over-indexed on like startups, the venture capital community. And don't get me wrong, that's a huge, huge business, and it fuels a lot of economic growth as well as like future innovation. So I think that, you know, with blockchain is really allowing people to own their own assets. You hold your own keys to your wallet. You're accountable for your money. You know, and those are like some of the key things. It's like, why are they holding our money and then taking it out? Maybe I can be more responsible if I hold the money. And so I think that becomes one of the key things that is driving like what we've seen a little bit of growth in crypto over the past few days is because people are like, well, shit, if my money's not secure there, you know, and the government's just going to bail people out and mint more money, is this going to cause more inflation? Well, you've got these micro economies existing with cryptocurrencies that offer some sort of, you know, more visibility around what they're doing. Hopefully that helped answer it.
No, that was great. And the only follow on to that is like, you know, when the internet came out, you know, the first thing I had was America Online. You get those little discs in the mail and, you know, you get 20 free minutes, you know, 100 free minutes, whatever. And you'd get this like portal and you'd log in. And that was like my version of the internet and a lot of people's first version of the internet. What does blockchain look like to a consumer? Is it some kind of a portal or website or dashboard?
Yeah. So funny because it's so true. It's like, what does it even look like?
It's like, sorry for the novice question, but I will admit I am the novice here.
It's a great question. Yeah. And I think that if we look at right now, I'd say for most people, what it looks like is some sort of wallet that you can install or download on your phone. Like for Constellation, it's the Stargazer wallet. You can get a Google Chrome extension. You can hold your cryptocurrency and you can send it between different peers. And that sending of that currency is validated by a decentralized network. That's the stuff you don't see, right? Is the orchestration of the entire network behind the scenes. That's the hundreds or thousands of people saying that, you know, Tate sent this money to, or this currency to Ryan. And so I think that, what does it look like? So right now it's kind of on the currency side. We're still in this like currency phase that most people know that, which is kind of sad. And I actually like blame a lot of these centralized exchanges like Coinbase and all these other guys, which I love what they do in terms of discovering new technology. But in many ways, it's forced people to kind of not look at all the cool technology that's being built and purely just focus on just the speculative price or value or perceived investment around that object.
So this is a perfect segue because I actually want to segue back and talk about the difference between crypto and blockchain, because they're two very different things. And if you haven't studied the space much, it's easy to sort of group those two together and just say, it's speculative and I don't want any part of it. But blockchain technology is, you know, one of the biggest changes, one of the most revolutionary technologies of our generation, standing next to the internet. Would you agree with that? And it has far-reaching applications well beyond currency.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the growth of crypto and the technology behind it, blockchain, it's growing much more rapidly than the internet was at roughly the same time frame. In terms of adoption, in terms of user bases, which are measured by wallet address or token holders, also measured through developers coming on. You're seeing month over month, like, you know, 100%, 200% growth of developers going away from the digital Web 2 world over to Web 3, right? That's what we call kind of the blockchain world. It's like a new spin. It's like a new, like, fresh lemon scent to blockchain and crypto. If it's got a four-letter word in your mouth, you know? So
right.
The difference is really kind of, I can merge it into one sentence and say that cryptocurrency leverages blockchain technology, right? So blockchain is really the programmable base that allows a cryptocurrency to be sent or transacted. It records the transaction on the ledger. So blockchain is the ledger. The cryptocurrency is really a data type that's moving across the ledger and is recorded on the blockchain in some sort of block that's immutable. Does that help, or is that too?
Yeah, no, that definitely helps. And could you briefly also explain the difference between Web 2 and Web 3? Because myself included, I haven't really wrapped my head around that.
Same.
Yeah. Okay. So Web 3, I'll get away from, like, there's like a theoretical application to it all, right? Like the theoretical side or the self-organization side is around governance, right? So the average person has the ability to govern the output of a Web3 company. They have a say, they have a voice, and it's not through equity ownership, it's through holding the currency. Why? Because if that user says they don't believe in you anymore, they sell all the currency, your price plummets, and now who's going to come and build on your network? Nobody, because there's no value in the network, right? So your voice is, and so that's one of the components of being a Web3 company, is that the ownership, the perceived ownership and value is not necessarily in equity, but actually in this token that people feel like they have a say. And if your ecosystem is set up to support governance, then that does really well in the sense of, like, sharing kind of ownership with the community. They feel like they are a part of it. They help grow your business. They want to see you succeed, because if you succeed, the price of the token goes up and you do really well, right? So they want to get involved. There's more inclusion. In Web 2, it's much more centrally, right? It's kind of read-write in the programming way, meaning they're publishing something and users use it, and then that central company goes out and sells data or sells you more products, right? It's kind of a binary relationship versus, like, kind of an ecosystem base. So Web 2, think of, like, Facebook, think of Google. It's like, hey, they're pushing products to you. You use it and they sell whatever they need to on the back end. In Web 3, there's multiple dimensions. Like I said, there's community governance. There's a token element, an economic element. And there's this crazy new technology that allows for different types of applications that use dependencies and the ledger in a secure way that's more transparent. So there's complete business shifts.
How long do you think it'll take for this to go mainstream?
I think we're already seeing it. What is it, like 10% of Americans have cryptocurrency wallets right now? Developers, like I said, are flocking. So the way I see it is, like, because developers are flocking, let's stay away from the cryptocurrency side and let's just look at developers. They're moving away from Web 2, right? Look at all the firings that have gone on at Facebook, Google, all these places right now. Twitter, right? Like, they're right, ultimately flocking to these Web 3 companies that have accumulated a lot of wealth over the past few years. So we're seeing this adoption happen. As developers come in, they start building applications for you to use. The future of this technology, you won't even know that it exists. You won't know that the seamless bit that has a bit of blockchain technology, and it'll just be part of your daily life. But you won't actually know it. It won't be like a Facebook, right? It's not going to be like, oh, now I'm using Web3. It'll be like different components of it. So my whole vision and with Constellation is that we're not trying to, I think a lot of crypto companies are saying, hey, we want Web2 to transform into Web3. We're saying, ah, that's kind of unreal to expect. It's like saying that all brick and mortar is going to be on e-commerce. No, it's right. not. Our vision is we want to bring Web3 tooling into Web2 because we don't believe that everything's just going to have this like switch and you're going to like, oh my God, we're all in Web3. I think like so much of our daily interactions and lives will be cryptographically secure through a decentralized blockchain network. And I think that's happening rather quickly. Like we're doing a lot of work with the Department of Defense. They're looking at decentralized networks as ways to mitigate data breaches on their centralized servers. Can you use a decentralized network to identify threat vectors? Because any sort of centralized cybersecurity method has a central vulnerability to attack. Once again, just like these banks, right? They have vulnerabilities because they're so centralized, right? There's some really good security on that, but there's still a threat vector that exists by having centralized cybersecurity. So they're already looking at how do we safeguard and thwart against attacks in this like cyber world that we're living in, and know that like even our their centralized systems could be compromised, right? So how do you do that? That's where I think that we're heading. And the term around that is called composability between Web 2 and Web 3. But so it's happening. Like I said, I don't think it's just going to be like that aha thing. I think it's just going to be like all of a sudden it's part of your daily life, right? Already people are seeing that you should have some Bitcoin as a diversification in your portfolio. So yeah, it's happening. If you want a real answer, probably like 3 years, I think you're going to see like, it's just going to have a complete switch.
Yeah. So on that, speak to the person who is listening to this and saying, I want nothing to do with crypto and I don't like it. It's too scientific. It's too theoretical. It's out there. I'm out. What make a compelling argument for that person to want to engage in this space and invest in this space? Cause I know there's a pilot out there listening to say, I want nothing to do with this. Right.
Yeah. I look at things as like an adoption curve, right? You've got, there's this whole like marketing theory about how you market to early adopters, early adopters. You know, it's kind of this bell-shaped curve and I forget all the different like bullets or milestones, but I would say that those people just stay away. There'll be a time that it makes sense to come in. Like I have no need to push anything on anybody. And I think that requires a lot more comfort. Like there's a lot of issues in the crypto world. Like where do you buy it? Where do you hold these wallets? If you're accountable for those wallets, there's no insurance. It's gone. You know, I see scams every day pop up in this space, but there's scams everywhere in this world. So I think it's really about when they feel comfortable to get involved. Like it's clear that it's not going away. I really don't believe it's going away. I would also say that I got into an Uber ride with somebody that also like I asked him the same thing. Like why wouldn't you not invest in crypto? And he's like, oh, well, they don't have any revenue to back up their price valuation. I'm like, okay. And I, you know, like without going into the theoretics of it, like that becomes your investment strategy. And I think that's kind of what you guys are about is like pick your investment strategy, right? But you can't ignore the fact that there is a whole socioeconomic movement going on in this space. And yes, it's volatile, but like look at the stock market over the past 3 years. You know, like I don't think anybody's impervious to whims and volatility. I do think that Web3 companies are getting more accountable than they were in 2018 in 2017 when we started. I think organizations or you know communities are starting to see that they have to be really involved. They can't just hold a bag of tokens and wait for it to go up. But you know, I would say do your research. Like there's some really fascinating things going on in the space, and that's what you should be investing in.
I think that to me, when I look at the space, you know, it's like anything that a new technology that emerges, there's this big wave and there's all this hype and expectation. And then the technology doesn't meet the expectation and there's a crash. You look at the internet bubble in 99, 2000, and everybody thought, well, that was a great idea. I guess that was a failure. And everybody moves on, and then slowly it creeps into everyone's life. And almost without realizing it, all of a sudden it's in everything. I kind of see that the same way. Yeah. I think that the something I wanted to bounce off of you, Ben, was, you know, the chairman of the SEC now, the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States, appointed by Biden, is Gary Gensler. He used to teach blockchain at MIT. And so I think that's quite a statement for the presidential administration to place someone who has a background in blockchain and cryptocurrency as the head of the SEC. Something that Gary Gensler has been very particular about is that the only cryptocurrency that he has sort of carved out as a commodity and not as a security was Bitcoin. What are your thoughts on that?
The only commodity is Bitcoin. Yeah. Yes. So in a lot of ways, I agree with that, right? So if you look at how, so when you have governance proposals for the protocol, you have people that can participate and put proposals to the protocol team, to the people building the protocol.
Sorry,
that's open
can you
source.
Just- just explain what a protocol is.
Oh yeah. Protocol is basically the pipes for moving information, right? So that's kind of what a blockchain is. So the blockchain protocol really is kind of how you move information. So yeah, sorry about that. So that's kind of like more industry, like we talk more about protocols in our world. So people building out the blockchain, we'll call it, or the Bitcoin protocol. Blockchain is like your more generic term, and you've got the Bitcoin protocol, or you have Constellations protocol. They submit a proposal, and then people that are participating in building the protocol, the core infrastructure layer, they implement those things based off a vote, right? So Bitcoin is one of the most decentralized networks. However, their governance has people can vote, but then there's one person in Florida that pushes that proposal through and manages it to be done or to get implemented, right? So it's like, okay.
I didn't have any idea about that. Can you break that down? Because yeah. I think a lot of people own, if you're somebody who owns one piece of cryptocurrency, it's probably Bitcoin. I'm sure they don't know about this person in Florida.
yeah, exactly, right? It's kind of funny. Like we've done a ton of, when we were orchestrating and designing our governance, we obviously went really deep into all the different major protocols, Ethereum protocol, Bitcoin protocol, and saw how they were kind of, how they operated, right? What was the process for saying, hey, I want to implement a change in Bitcoin. What is the process from that? So me as an individual, I'll just make it very simple. Me as an individual, I write up a proposal. I think this change should be done at Bitcoin's code base. And then there's this one individual that reads these proposals, organizes them, and then says, okay, we're going to, you know, then sends them to the open source development team that are contributing.
Who is that? How did they get elected or chosen?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Right. And I don't know his name, but I know there's like one person. So it's very fascinating. But so yes, I could see that as a lot of the crypto companies operate in a very like centralized capacity, right? Ethereum Foundation owns a ton of Ethereum. Does that make it totally decentralized? You know, I mean, you kind of weigh that. So, but Bitcoin is more of the truer statement that it is a decentralized currency that has wide distribution. And thus, like, not one single party can really infiltrate it or tear it down. So thus, it's somewhat of a commodity.
Interesting.
There's different types of crypto. There's Bitcoin, Ethereum, there's Dogecoin or whatever it's called, the funny mean one. Are these kind of like U.S. US dollars versus euros versus yen? I mean, is that a good comparison, or am I way off base?
Well, we start to wonder about what our currency is backed by. Am I right? So we're all sitting there going like, you guys just printed trillions of dollars and gave it out. Like, what is this really backed by? We're not on the gold standard. I wouldn't say that it's like, I guess you could kind of say it's like little countries. You've got like the Dogecoin, which is like, you could say it's like the Burning Man of tokens. Like, let's have a ton of fun, man. Like, what does this actually do? Nothing, but it's got inflation, deflation, and a lot of people trade it. So it's just purely speculative. It's got like mechanics in it, and it's just like a fun thing. But yet, if you're a trader, you can actually see like patterns in the trading patterns. And so people speculate it, and billions of dollars are traded on that. But yeah, I would say that where people are trying to get is that each ecosystem has their own token or currency, and it does something. It has different economic levers. It allows you to build certain applications. It's got incentivization structures for people to operate within. So they do kind of operate like their own little countries in a way, but it's more like, it's almost like, hey, how do you go into a theme park and that token unlocks that ride, and those rides are really dope, and yet, oh, I can go buy some food with that. But yeah, so I would put it more like that.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I just thought it was, you know, you buy for $5 and hope to sell for $10 or whatever it might be. What are those features? That's interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. I think that's why I was saying about the exchanges. You know, the exchanges are, you know, Coinbase, Binance, all these household names. In many ways, they did a great job of like showcasing Web3 and the cryptocurrency movement. But in many ways, they did a disservice. And they brought people in to go, hey, speculate on this token and it could go up in value, right? Well, what is that token doing? You know, we write very advanced tokenomics, which is basically economics around how a token moves through our ecosystem. So we have to think, that's what I was saying, like we become like economists at a very early stage in our business. That's rather overwhelming, right? It's like, okay, this currency is going to have some sort of circulating, some max supply. This is how much of it's in circulation. This is the value of it, but what is it used for? And ecosystems differ, but it's mostly you're paying a network. The high level is that, remember we talked about all the people at the bar? Well, in order to do that transaction and get them to say, hey, that transaction exists, you have to pay them a little bit. And that's essentially what the currencies, a lot of currencies do in ecosystems, is how are you paying what we call node operators or validator nodes, which are validating the transaction. That's the decentralized network. And so that currency is not just speculate on whether it's going to go up or down. It's whether there's going to be a lot of these different transactions that occur on the network that require people to pay some sort of fee to validate that transaction, which gives real value and utility to these cryptocurrencies, not just, hey, can I trade it?
If you were aspiring in this career, what would you recommend the education path would be for somebody who's like, first of all, I want to learn more about it, or maybe like they want to follow in your footsteps. Like, what would be a good background or just someone to follow in the space to learn more?
I think you have to have an insatiable desire for risk and risk and learning, not just like losing shit. I'm saying like learning, like you have to have a creative mindset that's very open to possibilities. There's so many moving pieces. Like this is not, like I'm not running a company where we just sell some software service and we know that this is our customer base. This is the, you know, the TAM, SOM, right, of our market potential. This is like, hey, we've got to deal with these actors called community members that vote on proposals to come through that impact our development roadmap and impact, you know, what applications are built. So where I would say is like, you got to have this like open mind in it. And I don't think it's impossible. I think it's really fascinating. Like I said, I think it's one of the most fascinating things of our, I think it's more fascinating than the internet because it's allowing people to self-organize in a different way. I would say for people is, when you look at a project, read through their tokenomics. Understand if they're building an application or they're building a protocol. There's big differences. A protocol. Yeah, so protocol is building developer tools for people to build applications on top. And then applications are using that blockchain or protocol. Ethereum, Constellation, Bitcoin are all protocols. Ethereum, Constellation allow people to build applications on top of them. So once that'll also help you kind of look at it, decide what you want to like invest in. Do you want to invest in the application layer or do you want to invest in the infrastructure layer of this future technology? And I think that's a really good starting point to understand how these things work. Just really break that off. And then you can start to dive into some where you find that you like talking with their community members or you see what they're all about or what their focus and vision is. And then honestly, I would tell anybody that's young to learn how to code fast. If you don't know a little bit of code, you're going to be left behind big time.
How young should they start? I've got young children. How young should I have them start learning code?
I don't have kids, but I put my sister's kids through code school and they're like 6 years old. So,
and what code school did you put them through?
I totally forget.
Okay.
Sorry. I think it's like Code Academy or something.
Was it like online?
Yeah. Online. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check it out because my daughter's six, so maybe it's a good time.
Get them thinking. It's just like thinking critically. It's such a fascinating space for thinking critically. There's a lot of smart people in this space. It's not just scams like you see on the headlines. There are so many smart, brilliant people. Like smart contract engineers are making like $1 million a year. Like it's crazy because there's not enough of them and that there's a huge demand to build these applications in Web3.
Can you break down a smart contract?
Yeah, I can. So Bitcoin did not have smart contracts. They wanted to be pure and make it just about the currency. But Ethereum came out and said, hey, we think people can use a distributed ledger for different purposes. We can remove the middleman. Much like this network removes the middleman, Bitcoin removes the middleman for confirming a transaction, we think that we could create this framework that people can program. And when two parties, the best way to describe it.
Real estate ICOs, transaction or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, real estate transaction. Yeah, so you would write this smart contract. You would actually program this. Ethereum provides all these frameworks for writing a smart contract. You would essentially say, hey, my house, worth, $500,000 is in this smart contract. When some random stranger deposits $500,000 in this smart contract, then the deed is transferred over and I get the $500,000 without any middleman. Now, if you think about a real estate transaction, you think about if you bought and sold houses, you think about all the different people that are involved in that transaction, right? You've got two agents, you've got the title company, you have, some sort of broker fee. You've got the legal side. Like you have so many people that touch the transaction for like that 4% or whatever. And what blockchain and smart contracts do is like, hey, you don't need all that. When this gets in there and this gets in there, then the contract's executed and both people go their own way. You don't need to do any more information on that.
Super valuable. Interesting. Well, yeah. You're the only person that I've ever heard call, because I, with FTX collapse last year in spectacular fashion and the massive fallout from that and the valuation collapse and a bunch of coins eviscerating out of thin air. I think you're the only person that I heard call it a bear market and not a collapse, which is it just highlights a different perspective than what most people have, which is, again, that early adopter curve where it's like, well, that was fun. It didn't work out. And I don't think that's the case, right? And I think that's what you're alluding to is that it's here to stay. It just, it's been volatile. It's like the internet in the 90s, right?
Yeah, we have these like jokes because we've been through three bear markets and building this business. We have these jokes. It's like, oh, when Bitcoin gets to this price, then you're going to see headlines that say crypto's done. Like, it's like almost like programmatic, is a whole other conversation. But you almost see it as like, okay, everybody's going to start coming out and being like, crypto's done. You guys had your fun. It's like, it's not done. It's still figuring itself out. What happened in 2018 was probably one of the biggest crashes. That like that was a crash. And then that bear market lasted 2 years. That was brutal. We're kind of seeing the same thing right now.
Why did it, real quick, why did it crash? Because, you know, right now it's like you have market crashes and you can sort of tie it to something like a debt crisis or dot-com bubble or Black Monday or something like that. What caused it to crash?
In 2018, you had the invention, or 2017 and 2018. 2017, you had the invention of these, what they called an ICO or an ICO, where initial coin offering, kind of like the play on an IPO. And basically, you would set up a smart contract that said, hey, deposit a bunch of Bitcoin or it was deposit a bunch of ETH, because this is all in Ethereum, right? Deposit a bunch of ETH, and when Ben mints his new token and distributes the new token, Ben gets the ETH, and the holders that put in the ETH get the new token. So you had this crazy game of arbitrage, right? And it just had this crazy growth. You had tons of people just seeing it as a get-rich-quick scheme. So you had people go, oh, I can raise off of anything. I can do any stupid idea. Kind of like the website thing in the late 90s. Right. It's like, right, I could sell a website for $1 million. Same shit. And so you had all these people basically go, I can do something. And then they take them, they raise more money than they ever could have in a short period of time, maybe even more money than they could have ever made in their life. Take it off, not even deal with the token. Now that token crashes. Now, how many times can you do that before the whole thing just crumbles? So you had so many scams happen in 2018. Very little accountability, more money flow in and flow out than you've ever seen, that eventually it just like cratered. Everybody just pulled out and they're like, I'm done doing this. And that was kind of the mark of the first or one of the biggest bear markets that we've seen in the past 5 years.
But if there's transparency and this is supposed to be a decentralized thing, I don't get it. I mean, isn't this the very thing that this is supposed to prevent? All these scams and things like that, because you could argue, people say, you know, the government's a scam and they're manipulating the monetary system by pumping dollars into it. But these are users of the system scamming the system. I mean, isn't that like a major vulnerability?
100%. 2018 was totally different. You don't see that happen as often anymore. The whole industry's really shifted completely into where the community actually takes more of an active role in guiding the development of these companies. So think of these smart contracts as just like, you're just giving millions of dollars away to some startup you don't even know, but you read a nice little white paper on their website and said, oh my God, these guys are doing some amazing things. And then they went, screw you. We don't really, it's too expensive dealing with this token and getting exchange listed. And so you can't, what are you going to do with, I mean, they can't really guide those funds. And guess what? They don't have any equity ownership to actually have any sort of say over the direction of the company. They can have a voice, but you know, that there's no legalese behind that.
And if it's if I'm understanding it correctly too, the transparency is limited to the ecosystem within which that token lives, right? So
right.
Bitcoin's ledger is transparent, but it's transparent inside of that ecosystem. It's not transparent across the entire globe into other protocols, right? So if you invested in some ICO, sure, there might be transparency, but it's only transparency inside the walls of that ecosystem. Yeah. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, I guess to some level, like if you gave me a bunch of ETH, you could see you could see my wallet and see all the transactions. And if I decide to sell all my ETH in 1 second, then I'm out. They don't have transparency on the company, but you do actually bring a really great point, is that this whole technology is here to bring a trustless ecosystem, and there was nobody to trust. Which is like the joke that was kind of one of the jokes that we all had in 2018. It's like, you can't trust anybody, but yet we're building this amazing piece of technology that's supposed to be trustless. Now, like every major industry, it starts to mature. And what happened with FTX is another like trust. Those people were not trustworthy. They were doing shady things and get rich quick schemes. And they kept isolated to their ecosystem. But what happened with FTX was not a problem of the technology at the core. That was just our industry becoming more mature. That was like an Enron scenario or right. like a banking scenario. It's like you have bad operators that had no accounting going on. And they just were able to sell and fundraise like no tomorrow and bring more people in and more names. And they had terrible books. That's not an issue of crypto. That's just capitalism's issue.
Right. So interesting.
I think I'm scaring all of your listeners. They're going to be like, hell no.
Well, I mean, look, we're one of our values of the podcast is bring an open mind. You know, come in here and, you know, we're going to listen to everybody and have an open mind and build a big picture in our investor portfolio. But, you know, these are questions that people have, and we want to make sure that we clearly delineate that scammers are not going away and crypto and blockchain is not going to prevent every scam on the planet. If you have bad actors, you can have a scenario where you have a scam, but the blockchain technology is a step in the right direction in exposing transparency. And that's a good thing. But you're still going to have people on the fringe outside of the technology that are going to be bad actors. So do your due diligence on everything that you do. I mean, it's ridiculous to say that, you know, when you have people, you're not going to have bad actors. It's the system that's being built that's supposed to prevent that. So, I mean, I think to your point, we're always going to have bad actors at the end of the day. And this show is to help kind of expose that and then make people aware that know what you're going into, eyes wide open before you go into it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Ryan, do you have something you want to jump in with?
No. I think this has been very helpful. Is there anything that we're not asking that somebody who really doesn't know anything about this industry or even knows a lot about this industry should be asking or maybe interested to know on anything in particular that's on the top of your mind?
Yeah. I think it's just, you guys have done a really great job of like getting me to, I don't really do the whole like talk about the basics and fundamentals very often, right? Like, you know, so that's kind of fun for me. It's very challenging. Also kind of doing a reflection of stuff. You know, I think that everybody's got like, how does it work? What's the value? You know, I look at it from a macro perspective is like, this is transformative technology that will impact our everyday lives. And we're seeing how it's going to impact our lives when we're looking at how does Facebook sell our personal data privacy. Like those things weren't an issue when you just blindly click terms of service and they're like, you said we could sell your data. Now we're all becoming aware. Like there's a fascinating shift and revolution that's happening in how business is orchestrated, how businesses are funded. What type of new innovations coming out there? You don't need to understand all of the inner workings of the technology unless you want to really nerd out. There is stuff to go like layers on layers and really take that red pill. And so it's like, you know, you're kind of getting involved in the future and how things will transact. And we're actually a part of that narrative, watching these banks, people go for a run on the banks, like, holy crap. Like this is exactly why crypto was made, right? Like this is, it's happening before our eyes where that shift, like people waking up and saying, I don't want Facebook to have my data. I don't like that they sell it. It's like, well, do you know how to sell it? They don't, but there's a lot of technology that's being built in the Web3 world that will facilitate data sales, data privacy. A lot of these things that are the really good cornerstones that have nothing to do with the cryptocurrency. Or they do, but they don't have to. You can just learn about the technology.
All right, last question we have for you. What's going to disrupt this space, or what's going to be the next disruption in this space in your mind?
In a negative or a positive way?
Either way.
Last year was the worst year for crypto I could ever imagine. That was bad. You had giant companies built overnight, and they just got too frivolous with their funds. They were collateralizing tokens that weren't Bitcoin and Ethereum and taking and leveraging against that. Like that was a wild year. And I stayed away from all that. I had our company stay away from all of it because it just wasn't secure. However, I think there's amazing, and they call that, there's a lot of that in the space called the DeFi space or decentralized finance, which really got its spawn over the past couple of years. And I think that DeFi has a lot of mechanisms that have yet to be realized and understood. Like, if you don't understand blockchain, I'm not even going to start with DeFi. It is a rabbit hole of stuff. Like, we have one guy at our company that just focuses on understanding DeFi. And half the time I'm like, what did you say? And he's 24 years old, right? So I do think there's revolution. There's an evolution happening with decentralized finance. I don't really want to, I'll stay away from going in there, but, you know, taking banking and putting it on a decentralized ledger, I think is incredibly valuable. I also think that where we're heading is that I truly believe that there's a convergence where, you know, Web3 tooling will be a part of our applications. You'll have more transparency over every application you use that's on a ledger that you can search. And I think that kind of interoperable component between, you know, Web3 and Web2 is a really fascinating vision where you're securing data, you're monetizing data in a new way using a distributed ledger. That's kind of the real value I see coming. One of the things that we're doing at Constellation, we have this device called the Door Traffic Miner that collects foot traffic data. We give people a reward in cryptocurrency, and then we sell that data to data brokers. And we provide all that transparency. So you as a data collector can actually monetize your own footprint, you know, and you can monetize that. We facilitate that brokering. And at the end of the day, you're getting crypto for that. You can do whatever you want with it. But these elements of creating more data transparency around data, I think are going to kind of really connect people to go, oh, there's real value in this crypto world. You don't have to buy this NFT of this art that means nothing and figure out how to sell it. You're actually going to have something that's like, oh, I get cryptocurrency for providing data. And if I don't want to sell that data anymore, I get to control that. That to me is going to be a huge narrative that shifts in the next couple of years.
Fascinating. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. This has been very educational and inspiring, and I hope that at least some people out there can better understand it or better guide their kids into how to understand it and help.
By the way, I just texted my wife and said, "Get our kid into a coding class." So
excellent. Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Ben. Yeah.
Guys, thank you.
Yeah,
can't tell you how much.
Great questions. I wasn't sure how serious you'd take this, and you guys got some stuff out here. But I think I'm just scaring more people. But
no, it's good.
Education is good. So
yeah, all right, taking us out.
Sure.
Thanks,
Ben.
Thanks, guys.